This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm joined on the phone lines from somewhere here in KL by Arif Ruse, the man supposedly with the news. Hello, Arif.
Hello, Richard.
And somewhere else over there is Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Good evening, gentlemen, and good evening, listeners.
Well, we've had a bit of a palaver trying to get ourselves all together in the same room at the same time. Technical issues notwithstanding, we've got a show for you in two parts. First up, cars, cars, and more cars. In second part, in part two, used market finds. And it's a Volvo, a 2012 Volvo V40. But don't let that bother you. First of all, let's get with some news, Mr. Arif Ruse.
Right, so after 2 weeks or 3 weeks or, I don't know, an entire month without news, we finally do have something, the first of which is our neighbors, Indonesia and Thailand, have decided to stimulate their local car industry, much like we did with sales tax free.
Mm-hmm.
So for Indonesia, they decided to ease lending rules for electric vehicles and electric vehicle infrastructure. We don't know really how long this will last, but this seems to be a response for the pandemic. For Thailand, however, they've decided to stimulate car sales also with tax incentives, but with trade-in coupons. So you would give your old car to the dealer that you're trying to buy a new car from, and you get rebates for up to 13,300 ringgit, which is pretty cool. The interesting thing is they've decided to implement these tax incentives and trade-in coupons for up to 5 years, which is... some people would say is beyond the length of what would be the pandemic, but we don't know, right?
We hope so.
But yeah, they said their car industry needs at least 5 years to recover whatever that is being lost from these days. Any thoughts on these, guys?
Well, I would say this. First of all, Indonesia is being very honest and realistic about the situation in the auto market in the region, which affects everybody. Thailand... yeah. Also doing the same thing. They're being very realistic and very honest about how the recovery is going to affect the auto market. And these two are the biggest, fastest growing markets in the region right now. Malaysia, on the other hand, is still thinking that, you know, everything is going to be lovey-dovey and wonderful and they've got nothing to worry about. And if you look and see, Indonesia and Thailand are both concentrating on electric vehicle mobility with realistic propositions to the population to own an electric vehicle.
Right.
Whereas in Malaysia, they just keep talking about it. They're not really doing anything to say, yes, this is it. Go out there, buy yourself an electric vehicle. These are the incentives we're giving you right now. There's nothing like that on paper for the Malaysian buyer.
I tell you what did stimulate my interest, using that word again, like Thailand, to stimulate the car sales, right, was the announcement that Jeep gave about the first electric vehicles. And they're doing the Jeep Wrangler that's going to be EV.
Yeah,
exactly.
But that's just an aside. But you're right, Daniel. You know, it seems to be like there are countries moving forward in the region that really want to make this. They're just up the road, so to speak, you know, and they really want to make a big deal about this. And yet here we are yet again, talking around in circles and not really moving very far forward with it.
I really miss doing the news.
I don't know if I do miss doing the news or just missing the fact that we get to get a good whinge every week.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there's no point whinging if it doesn't benefit the population and the environment.
This is true.
Our Ministry of Transport, or rather our government, is not just laying down in the tall grass. They have been thinking about some new regulations, and one of them is regulations on e-scooters and e-bicycles.
Oh, my word. What? I mean, I think I've seen one in the last 6 months.
Yeah, same. We probably saw the exact same one. Anyway, this conversation began because some people brought it up to the Ministry of Transport saying that these e-scooters and e-bicycles are moving way too fast for whatever sidewalks that we have, and they're moving way too slowly for regular roads. And often, we would see that one person riding against traffic, which is quite dangerous. So the Ministry of Transport, Mr. Wee Ka-siong, He says that he wants to look into creating new regulations for these micro-mobility vehicles, they're being called, because they could cause accidents, obviously. And he says they need to be regulated, possibly with license and registration, and even a possible ban on public roads. Of course, I should say that these are being thought out at the moment. We don't really need license and registration at the moment, but they thinking of that.
It's an interesting thing because if you look at some of the countries who have kind of taken these e-scooters on, or whatever we want to call them, let's go with e-scooters, and we look at some of the cities within those countries. The US, for example, is by far the biggest market for these things, for the scooters in particular anyway. You know, yeah. LA's got a really good way of dealing with things. They have them over on the West Coast where people can actually get paid for recharging these scooters. You look at New Orleans, which had a big problem because it was very difficult to get from one part of downtown to another part of downtown without a car or without public transportation. These scooters came online, and what you saw was businesses that were not getting business started to get business because people were using these scooters to get around and exploring the cities in places that they couldn't do in a normal vehicle.
Yeah.
Of course, there are other cities that have outright banned them for this very reason that you just mentioned, that they can be a little bit dangerous. But all it takes is a little bit of education, where to ride them, where not to ride them, and the safety thing that you need to be doing with it. That's all it is. I mean, and if it means you should get some kind of very quick license where you have to do, a two-hour lesson and wear a helmet and just be aware of what you're doing, then I think that's fine. But sitting people down and saying, oh, it needs regulating, it needs licenses, you need to be registered, it's going to put a stop to these things in its track. And it could be a last mile resolution problem. Sorry, that could help out with this last mile thing. And already we're saying, no, we're not going to use them.
Well, I just have one thing to say. You know, I don't want to look so far as United States, but look at Singapore. Singapore has got e-scooters being used. I was actually quite fascinated to see young children, even up to people my age, 50-something, using them in the city and also in the suburbs of Singapore. Yeah. So why don't we just look at what Singapore has done? Instead of rewriting the book, just follow what they're doing.
Yeah. And you know what? They're fun to ride. They're easy to ride. And if you keep yourself safe and you wear a helmet and you don't go into oncoming traffic, just be sensible, you know?
Yeah. It must be said.
That's just my humble opinion.
It must be said, however, that, you know, Singapore and several places in the US, they do have proper bicycle lanes and their pedestrian streets are very, very wide. So that's probably something that we have to work on first.
Yeah, for sure.
The other thing that the Ministry of Transport has been up to recently was quite an interesting announcement, I think. It has to do with the fact that cars with expired road tax not exceeding 3 years or 36 months can renew their road tax without a Puspakom check.
Well, I think it's a very good idea. I love this idea. Why? Because there are a lot of people out there that have more than two cars, okay? Some of them have what they call their weekend warrior cars or their weekend driving cars, or, you know, they have the odd pickup truck or sports car which they use for fishing or for driving fast on some deserted road up to Ulu
or
whatever.
Off-road, Daniel, you know?
Yes. So anyway, so having this option, I think, is great because why? Today, with the pandemic, a lot of people are saying, I can't afford to go off-road on the weekend, or maybe I can't even take my car up to Ulu Yam because I can't afford the fuel or the tire cost. And, you know, I just want to sit quietly and wait until this thing is over. So that means it's better for them not to renew their road tax and insurance. Just keep the car until further notice to go and renew. Now, when it's time to renew, maybe a year or year and a half from now, they don't have to go through all the processing and the payments, which is a big saving in this climate. So I think it's a very good move. I can't understand why they made it 3 years. I think 2 years would have been enough, but maybe they're saying we will not be out of this pandemic for the next 3 years.
Yeah, that seems to be the kind of trend, doesn't it?
Yes.
One thing I'm worried about, though, I mean, because sometimes people with two-year-old or three-year-old cars, when they go to have their road taxes renewed, the cars actually aren't that roadworthy. And one thing that I'm worried about is when people with three-year-old cars that have been sitting around for a long time and then they go to renew their road tax and then, you know, they don't have to go through the Puspakom check. Sure, it costs a lot, but it's a big loophole for safety, isn't it?
Well, here's what I'm thinking. People who only have one car, I expect, will not be sitting on it for 3 years.
Exactly.
You know, and if it's only one car, it's the car that they're using to get around on a daily basis, meaning correct. It will have been become tested and whatever. That car that sat around with its road tax having expired is probably, you know, the second car, that the fancy car or whatever it is. And it's likely that they're going to be newer and less in need of having these checks.
Normally, the spare car or the fancy car, yeah. got a good point. If you don't use it, if you keep it idle, of course, there will be issues like brakes and liquids and
everything else. Yeah.
But a true car enthusiast or even a mild car enthusiast will definitely start the car every now and then. Like during COVID, you couldn't go anywhere, but you still started your car. You still rotated your tires a little bit. You maybe drove around your neighborhood without Rotex. I mean, you know, if you're like in a gated community thing, it's okay. Like I can drive around the neighborhood, take my little son or daughter for a quick drive, or, you know, just get the car warmed up. And that's fine. They are not going to endanger their cars or their lives. What I'm more worried about is cars that are running right now on the road by people who are having less and less money to spend are not servicing their car. They're not spending on brakes. They're not spending on tires or suspension. These cars, which don't go for any checks, are actually more dangerous.
On that light note, shall we move on to some nice new car launches?
Yes, please.
We had some very interesting cars this week, especially. One of them is the new Nissan Almera Turbo, which has finally arrived. Yahoo!
Good news.
It's a very, very, very pretty B-segment car. Right. I think it looks much better than the City or its competitors. Right. Prices apparently might start between 80 to 90,000 ringgit, and Nissan, or rather Edaran Tanjung Motor ETCM, have been saying that we Malaysians finally get the best of something.
Correct.
Because the Nissan Almera Turbo that's going to be coming here will be the highest spec in ASEAN. It will get a 1-liter three-cylinder turbo with 100 horsepower and 152 newton meters of torque, which is par for the course, really. CVT gearbox as well, but the best part of it, obviously, the fact that you get foldable seats, LED lights. If you buy the top-line version, you get 16-inch wheels, a semi-digital cluster, a 360-degree camera, blind spot monitoring, cross-traffic alert, and cruise control, all in a car that would cost roughly 90,000 ringgit. That's very, very good.
That's a very heavily loaded car, and it's a first for Tanjung. I think they've woken up to the fact that, you know, Malaysians really want top-notch even for their lower-priced cars.
Mm.
And also because the Honda City comes fully loaded with a lot of interesting new features, they have to play the game right.
So which one is better equipped, do you think? The City or the Almera?
I think both are equally equipped, but the City is a little bit more forward with its new gearbox technology.
I see. Well, there's also another Japanese car that's been rumored to arrive. It's called the Mitsubishi Xpander. It's Mitsubishi's 7-seater MPV meant to take on Honda's BRV. And it's going to come with a 1.5-liter engine with 105 horsepower, 140 newton meters of torque via a 4-speed auto. This car obviously was launched in other markets. I believe Indonesia has it, Philippines has it. We are getting the facelifted version, and it's obviously going to look a lot of better. Mitsubishi hasn't released a lot of details about it because it's still pending its launch, am I right?
True. The launch will probably somewhere in November. The car is being previewed right now at Mid Valley Shopping Mall. So you can actually go there and have a look at it and, you know, see it being uncovered and walk around it. But you can't touch it and you can't get into the vehicle. But you must remember, this vehicle has already been launched overseas 2 years ago. So there's a lot of information online. You can even go to DSF. There's lots of pictures, lots of images of the vehicle inside, outside. So you pretty much know what you're getting. It is going to be a very, very popular seller for Mitsubishi. It's going to be their bread and butter model because it's going to be below 100,000 ringgit. Secondly, the rivals are starting to look a little bit dated.
Yeah. This one has those big, it looks like a shield for a superhero.
Correct, yeah. Correct.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway, should we move on to some global car launches?
Yes,
there's
please.
A whole bunch over here. So we should start with the Toyota Yaris GR. It's finally gone into production. Am I right, Daniel?
Yes.
So this Yaris GR is the hot version. GR stands for the Gazoo Racing, Toyota's racing division these days. And it's going to come with a 1.5-liter three-cylinder with a CVT gearbox, but they also sell a high-performance model, which gets a 1.6-liter engine.
Six-speed manual.
Fantastic, right?
And a four-wheel drive system.
Yep. You also get body kit, new wheels, and huge brakes that measure a diameter of 16 inches. They're bigger than most wheels. The interesting thing is we won't be able to get it.
What?
they're building a right-hand drive version for the UK. So the orders in UK have piled up. So I think they're looking at, you know, let's supply to the UK market and the European market first. We'll worry about a little country called Malaysia much later on. But I'm sure after 1 or 2 years of this car being in the market, it'll come to Malaysia via some grey importer because it's going to sell. Even though it's going to be a little bit pricey, it will sell because there'll be people who just want to get their hands on this car.
Yep. Another car that we will want to get our hands on is the aforementioned Jeep Wrangler plug-in hybrid. And they're not going to call it a 4x4, it's a 4xe. All about branding, isn't it?
Yes.
But this new Wrangler is pretty awesome. On the face of it, a very, very basic Jeep Wrangler. Only the fact that it has a charging port outside the car. And the charging port gets you extra 40 kilometers of all-electric driving. But Jeep maintains that it can still go through 2.5 feet of water, which is very, very good considering that, you know, there's going to be a lot of electrics and batteries and dangerous things inside the car. This is sort of like a precursor to Jeep's plan to survive all these changes, basically. So a full electric vehicle model will be coming in 2022. And in fact, all of their cars are going to be electrified by then as well. But they are also selling an e-bicycle. And, you know, considering we spoke about e-scooters and e-bicycles just now, perhaps you'd like a teaser on what will be the future of mobility.
Now, I had a look at this. It's a beautiful looking thing, don't get me wrong. It weighs 35 kilograms. It's got 4.8-inch all-terrain tires. It's got a 750-watt motor and an 80-kilometer EV range. However, it starts at $5,899 for a bike.
But you must understand the concept that Jeep is trying to put out here. Jeep is selling now a plug-in hybrid Wrangler, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What if now you take your Wrangler and go off-road like I do on the weekends, right? And it gets stuck in water and it can't come out. You take out your electric bike with all-terrain tires, with an 80-kilometer EV range. You travel to the nearest workshop, get a tow truck to come. Because why? When you're stuck in the jungle, a tow truck can't find you.
This is true. But it's 24,000 ringgit before we even import it and add tax to it. Can you imagine? You could buy a Myvi for the same price as this bike.
Yes, but if you can afford a plug-in hybrid Wrangler, you can afford this. At the end of the day, they probably will bundle it together and sell it together at one price.
You know what they say these days? You know, bicycles are the new expensive cars.
True.
It's funny, Matt, because I've seen a lot of people buying bicycles lately.
I mean, recently there was a video of a very famous politician who went on a bike ride with some police escorts, but we'll get into that in a different
later
matter.
Later, yes.
Final car, I think we should give this a lot of time because it's the new Mercedes-Benz S-Class. It's the ultimate luxury machine, and the all-new S-Class weirdly doesn't come in looking like a different Mercedes-Benz. Instead, it looks like a bigger E-Class, which goes against the trend of what Mercedes design generally goes, because usually they will build the S-Class and everything else looks like an S-Class. This time, everything kind of looks like a C-Class. But anyway, this it's got new rear lights, which hark back to 70s Mercedes-Benzes, which is nice. They're wide and short, and the side profile looks very low, classic Mercedes-Benz silhouette as well. But a lot of the changes comes on the inside, where now you get 5 new screens and an iPad-style second-gen MBUX central touchscreen, which removes the really, really good touchpad that they had previously, and a rotary wheel. So now it's just touchscreen or voice activation, which you activate by saying, "Hey, Mercedes." They're also including this thing called the augmented reality heads-up display. So when you have a regular heads-up display, obviously it shows you the speed, sometimes the navigation. But with this AR heads-up display, now you can get your directions transposed directly in front of you. So I don't know how else to describe this. It's like if Waze tells you you're turning left in like 300 meters, it will show the arrow left right in front of you in the heads-up display. It's a very, very cool car.
That sounds interesting.
The new Mercedes-Benz S-Class also debuts rear seat airbags. So these airbags sit in the front seats of the car. Another safety feature that has already been debuted with different cars is the car will also use the suspension to boost itself up by, I'm guessing, half a meter. Well, not half a meter, but
not half a
boost
meter.
Itself, boost itself up by some margin if it detects a side collision, so that the car that's going to hit you will hit the underneath of the car rather than immediately into the passenger cabin. Right. Very, very interesting stuff. The big news about the engines, though, is the fact that they'll be coming in with this S580E, which comes with an inline six engine and an electrical motor, which makes about 510 horsepower. But the range on this thing is what I'm about to talk about, because it will now have 100 kilometers of range on a single charge. Simply put, we've reached a point where plug-in hybrids will already become usable in everyday lives. Right. Because I was testing the new 7 Series a couple of weeks ago, and 50 kilometers, they quoted, is not enough for you to live with an electric car, really. 100 kilometers sounds like a better idea.
Especially for Malaysians, you know, even in Klang Valley, if you're coming from the suburb and you're working in KL city centre, you have to take into consideration traffic jam, you're sitting in traffic, so that mileage of 100 kilometres actually becomes reality of 60 kilometres.
Yeah. So very interesting stuff with this new Mercedes S-Class. I think it follows the trend of the S-Class where it sets the luxury benchmark. It certainly looks the part as well. The only thing is, I think, Richard, now that you've set in the new 7 Series, looking at the photos of the S-Class, it doesn't really look that different.
Really?
I think so.
That's a shame. This is the thing, right? When you sit in the back of a luxury car, are they all really that much different from one another?
Not really.
You've got your little screens, you've got somewhere to put your expensive drinks. They're all about the same.
They're all about the same. They're all very flashy. They're all out to just dazzle you, you know?
I mean, I think it's the thing. If I was to spend that amount of money on a luxury car, I don't want to be sat in the back anyway.
Yeah.
We've got one coming flying under the radar from Vietnam, I understand.
Yes. You know, the Vietnamese car brand called VinFast, and, you know, basically all of their models are based on old BMWs, but they've decided to make their most expensive car, which is called the VinFast President, and is limited to 500 units, and it costs more than a Ferrari in the US at $164,000. It comes in black and gold, which is tasteful. And it also comes not with a BMW engine, but with possibly an LS motor, a 6.2-liter V8 making 420 horsepower. And one of the reasons why Vietnam's richest man decided to make this car was because he wanted to push the bill on how far VinFast could go as a premium brand. VinFast itself have been making sort of premium cars, but they haven't been that successful with it. So this VinFast President is supposed to establish itself in the Asian markets as a proper rich man's vehicle or woman.
$198,000, right? Around 4.6 billion Vietnamese dong.
Yes. It's
I like the way you said it. Okay.
Yeah, 420 horsepower V8, 0 to 100 in about 6.8 seconds. It just looks like another fancy SUV.
It's just bragging rights, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. The black and gold one looks fairly tasteful. Right. But the all kind of goldy orange one, I think just no. No, I don't like it at all.
There will be buyers, of course, because there's some people out there who just want something different.
Yeah.
But do we think they've missed the mark in the Vietnamese car market? You know, import taxes, foreign automakers' vehicles are overpriced. People will not pay the same amount of money for Vietnamese cars, given that they've not got the best reputation. Or is that just me chewing the fat?
I think it's just, you know, bragging rights again. Even if they sell 5 units, they'll be very happy.
It depends how you market it, I suppose. If the marketing is good and you can get a good team behind it, you can make anything seem premium to an extent. True. Okay, let's take a short break, shall we?
Yep.
Yes, we should.
All right, we are at the end of part one here on Cruise Control. That's all the news out of the way, all the car launches out of the way. We actually had news. Didn't that feel good?
Good.
When we come back in just a few moments, we will be digging through the archives, or rather the junkyards, the scrapyards, the Auto Trader magazines, and having a look to see what we can find in the range of Volvo. We're looking for a 2012 Volvo V40. That's all coming up after these messages here on BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm Rich Bradbury. I've got Arif Ruse and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my on the phone lines. We've been talking about a bit of news, how we'll be dealing with those big deal of e-scooters and e-bikes shortly here in Malaysia, because that's such a big deal. We've also had some car launches, both local and global. But now we're having a look for a Volvo. In particular, we are looking for a 2012 Volvo V40. And why is that, Daniel?
Very simple. Whenever someone comes and asks me, oh, what's a nice little hatchback to buy? What's a premium hatchback that you would recommend? And, you know, when they use the word premium hatchback, generally people think of BMW and Mercedes-Benz. Hmm. But BMW has not had a new 1 Series for quite a bit. Of course, the latest 1 Series has arrived, but it's not in our shores yet. Mercedes has had a hatchback, the A-Class hatchback, for quite a bit of time. Audi has not been selling a hatchback for a very long time. And people forget that Volvo has had a hatchback in Malaysia for 6 years.
Yeah, and a very well-built one.
A very well-built one. The V40 has been around for a long time, but it's one of those vehicles that has sort of blended with the background and people really don't see it.
Yeah.
You know, and when I started mentioning the V40 to a few people, especially people in the, you know, 40, 50 age group, they always think, you know, Volvo, okay, high safety, so that'll be good for me because I'm coming to a certain age where I'm a bit afraid of death, you know. Second thing is, I want something with a little bit of badge branding so that, you know, I can show that I, you know, even though I'm driving a small hatchback, it's not a cheap car, you know. Yeah. And the third thing is, they want something that's easy, no complications, just get in and drive. You see, as some Malaysians get a little bit older, they're not into the fancy gimmicks that you find in some cars. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. Me, you know, I like
simple. Exhibit A.
Exhibit A. I like simple, straightforward instrument clusters, straightforward buttons and knobs on my central console. I don't want a touch screen because if I'm driving, I don't want to look down to touch the screen. I want to be able to feel it with my hands and know exactly where the climate control is, where the radio selector button is, where it's a volume knob.
Yeah.
So when I talk about an older car, yes, but I don't want anything too old. So when you look at the Volvo V40, 6 years old, you know, it started out in 2013, 2014. It's still quite a fresh design, very angular, very sharp, nice chiseled edges. Yes, you go in, it's not as exciting as a new A-Class with a digital dashboard. It's not as cosseting or driver-centric as the new BMW 1 Series, but it's a very nicely presented car.
Yeah.
So we looked at a few used units, and the funny thing is, this car, when it first was launched, it was about 180,000 ringgit for the starter model. Today, it's about a third of the price. 60,000 to 70,000 ringgit, you can get a really decent Volvo V40. And the good news about buying a used Volvo, you never see a used Volvo with body stripes, go faster wheels.
This is true.
Added wings,
so true.
Spoiler kit, carbon fiber finish on the sides, carbon fiber diffuser at the back, or some aftermarket exhaust system. They all still look like they came out of the showroom. They're all driven by very sensible, serious individuals.
Mm. Yeah. That is exactly the reason why you should buy a Volvo V40, because, I mean, it's a sensible brand for sensible people. And you're right on saying that it hasn't aged that much. The only thing, like if you look into the interior of the V40, the only thing that makes it dated, I think, is the fact that it actually has phone number buttons on it.
Yes.
0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and the star and the hash button. But if you look around that, you know, it's all that you would need. And I'm starting to feel a lot like Daniel these days after sitting in all of these fancy cars with digital clusters and everything. It's a bit much.
Yeah, because you see, even with the digital cluster, it's great to look at. It's great to photograph. You know, like for Arif, if he's got a blind date and she comes in the car, she'll be blinded by the interior.
You get one of those fancy glow-in-the-dark cars, drive her all the way down to Malacca, Arif, where they have that new river show for you.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, yes. But you know, you get into a Volvo and it's not dazzling, you know?
Yeah.
I like the fact that it's reserved, you know, and simple and generally easy on the eyes without being overly done. It's a functional car, you know, where function is more important than form. I think it's a great looking car. Right. I think it's probably very good value for money. And I think, like you, Daniel, I have a distinct fear of death at this age as well. getting into a Volvo, I would feel safer.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, you're automatically feeling like, you know, okay, if something hits me, I pity the other person, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Years ago, my father had a 244 DL, right?
Oh, the brick house.
It was built like a tank, and we were going down a hill, and the brakes failed on the Volvo, and we were all in the car like, oh, this is the end. We're done. And my dad was like, no, remain calm. We're in a Volvo.
that's a Volvo advertisement right there.
And,
yeah.
And we know you're not lying because you're right here on air live.
Exactly.
So with this Volvo V40, which models are around here?
Okay,
which
there's a few models, the T4, T5, T6, the inscription model. Well, I always say if you're buying secondhand, go for the highest spec model because why? It's got the most number of toys. But the model which I personally like is the Cross Country.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the Cross Country was supposed to be like, you know, like an active crossover. In theory, it's just got this, you know, side cladding at the side. It's got bigger wheels. It's sitting a little bit higher up. It's got a little bit more power. But the great thing about the Cross Country is it actually looks like it just came out of the factory last month.
Yeah,
you know,
it was Volvo ahead of the crossover game.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and you know, very much. At that time, Mercedes didn't have a Cross Country. BMW didn't have the X2, and yet a lot of people forgot about this Volvo.
Yep,
I like them.
Yeah, it seems ready for anything, sort of. Right? It looks like it's ready for anything.
Yeah. So, for example, if you go on the classifieds right now, if you look at a 2016 V40 Cross Country, 2-liter. It's got all the bells and whistles that Volvo has put into the car. You know, I give you a simple example. Auto park feature, keyless entry, okay? Push start engine, eco drive mode, 6 airbags. It comes with the original 17-inch alloy wheels. Triptronic. It's got all the safety features. It's got blind spot sensors. It's got 2 electric seats in front. It's got so many functions, yet you can buy, a 2015, 2016 model for 70,000 ringgit.
Okay, well, final thoughts on this then, right?
Right.
When you are buying a second-hand Volvo, and we talk about this quite a bit,
right,
how expensive would it be on a daily basis, day-to-day, if something went wrong with it to get the parts replaced? Is it much more expensive?
Okay, generally, if you talk to anybody who's looking to buy a Volvo, the first thing they say, oh, Volvo resale value, very bad. That has been the mindset for many years. Mm. And these people have not actually been tracking to see whether the resale value is bad or not. Yes, long time ago, when Volvo was very small in terms of its volume of sales, spare parts were expensive because why? You sell a few cars, you only bring in a few spare parts, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So parts were expensive, and so the resale values were dropping. But in the last 7 to 8 years, you can go and track yourself on the online classifieds. The resale value of the average Volvo from the XC90 SUV right down to this V40 is comparable to any of its German rivals.
Yeah.
Okay?
Wow.
Spare parts pricing, somewhere between the Japanese and the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's slightly lower than the Germans, but it's more than the Japanese. And it's still a European car, right?
This is true.
Yeah.
Right. And if you talk to Volvo mechanics, professional Volvo mechanics, not specialists, but people who regularly look after Volvos, they'll tell you that their parts actually last a little bit longer than the Japanese car spare parts. So even though you're paying a little bit more, the lifespan of the parts is a bit more longer.
Hmm.
I think I'd like to add, because I've been in the market for a hatchback or a wagon of some sort, and I've been leaning towards the BMW 1 Series. But
right.
BMW 1 Series doesn't have that much rear space because it's rear-wheel drive. And it costs roughly a 2013 model would cost you about 60,000 ringgit these right. days. The Mercedes-Benz A-Class has held roughly better value, I would say. They're still around 80,000 to 90,000, but I've never really liked the Mercedes-Benz A-Class because inside it felt really cheap.
Right.
The Volvo seems to be a very, very good package, mainly because it's in between both prices. Exactly. The BMW 1 Series doesn't have that much space, and the 116, 118i models were very, very poorly spec'd compared to a full-spec Volvo for 10,000 ringgit more expensive. I would say maybe slightly more reliable and definitely better built and better spec. So
exactly. And the Volvo Cross Country, V40 Cross Country, has got 213 brake horsepower, 300 newton meters of torque. What else do you want in terms of a hot hatch?
Yeah, agreed.
Dun, dun, dun. There you go. Arif, that's your next car, is it?
Yeah, so from BMW to Volvo.
We'll see. Might need something bigger.
I know somebody recently who went from a Volvo to a BMW. So, you know.
It happens. Yeah. It happens.
Yeah. Swings and roundabouts.
Right.
There you go. Right, on that note, shall we wrap up?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been tuned in to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM, or you could be listening to us via podcast. And I'm guessing you could be listening to us on a phone or on a tablet or maybe even on your laptop where you download the podcast wherever you normally get it from. And of course, you can download the app, which is available in the App Store or on Google Play. We're on Spotify as well. And Arif, do you want to quickly tell people about our Instagram page with those wonderful pictures you take?
Yes, our Instagram page with those wonderful pictures we take and our 10 followers. You can find us at BFM Cruise Control on Instagram.
There you go. This has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.